With a tail spinner's sleight of hand, I advance the calendar. The date is now Friday, the 7th of July, 1848. I rotate the globe and sight upon my home village of Haworth, in the north of England. Reader, I present for you a picture of Haworth on the morning of that fateful day when my adventures began. The sun, glinting from between cloud masses in the vast, cerulean Yorkshire sky, illuminates the ancient stone houses that line the steep, stone-paved main street. Shopkeepers scrub their doorsteps. A farmer herds a flock of sheep, and village women carry baskets past a horse-drawn cart piled high with raw wool. At the top of Church Lane, isolated at the highest point in the village, stands the parsonage, a two-storied house built of grey brick, roofed with stone flags and flanked by graveyards. Beyond the parsonage lie the moors, undulating hills cloaked in grey-green heather, shading into the far horizon. Inside the parsonage, I was sweeping the hall when I heard a thud outside. Puzzled, I set aside the broom and opened the door. My younger brother Branwell toppled towards me and crashed at my feet, sprawling across the threshold. "Branwell," I said, peering with consternation at him through my spectacles. He pushed himself to his knees and smiled jauntily up at me.
"Ah, my dear sister Charlotte,"
he said, slurring the words.
"How convenient that you should be here just in time to welcome me home."
I regarded his bleary eyes and lurid complexion, his dishevelled clothes and shaggy auburn hair. Rank fumes of whisky rose from his person. "You've been drinking again." I felt the anger, disgust and helplessness that Branwell's inebriation always occasioned in me.
"It was just a little tipple down at the Black Bull Inn,"
Branwell protested, clambering to his feet.
"Life gets unbearably dull hereabouts, and surely you wouldn't deny me a bit of amusement now and then."
"Except that it isn't only now and then." I shut the door more firmly than was necessary. "And it's not just the drink. You've taken laudanum, haven't you?" Branwell had, alas, degenerated into a habitual user of that tincture of opium dissolved in spirits.
"I'm sorry, Charlotte," Branwell said, "but I was so in need of comfort."
A coughing fit racked his thin body.
"Can you not see how miserable I am? Please forgive me."
Reluctant compassion quenched my anger as I observed my brother. He was only 31, but looked a decade older, his once handsome features haggard. Still, I could see in him a vestige of the robust, bright-eyed boy who had been my favourite childhood companion. "You had better go upstairs before Papa sees you like this," I said. The door of the study opened, and out stepped our father. Though in his 70s, Papa was still an imposing figure, over 6 feet tall, white-haired, stern-featured and proud of posture. Beneath his black clerical garb, he wore a voluminous white silk cravat wound high around his neck to protect him from Yorkshire draughts and guard against bronchitis. He squinted at Branwell through the spectacles perched on his prominent nose, and a look of anxious confusion came over his face.
"I thought you were asleep upstairs," he said to Branwell. "Have you been gone all night?"
Branwell hung his head. His coughs subsided into wheezes.
"Not all night. I just slipped out for a few hours. That's God's honest truth." "It is a sin to deceive,"
Papa said, frowning in reproach.
"And shameful of you to invoke God as your accomplice."
My younger sisters, Emily and Anne, appeared in the parlour doorway. Anne, neat and unobtrusive as always, held a cloth with which she'd been dusting furniture. When she saw Branwell, distress clouded her violet eyes and gentle features. "Oh dear," she murmured. Emily, tall and lanky, pushed up her leg of mutton sleeves. Always indifferent to her appearance, she stubbornly clung to that outmoded style of dress. She had been canning blackberry preserves, and purple stains blotched her apron. Heat had frizzed her brown hair and flushed her long face, and that day she looked even more wild and singular than usual. She glared at her brother. She had lost all tolerance for the sickness, the convulsive fits, and the unpredictable moods that Branwell inflicted upon our household.
"Well, have you all gotten a proper look at me?"
Branwell said with sudden belligerence.
"Then I believe I shall go to bed. I'm all done in."
Reeling towards the stairs, he stumbled. Emily grudgingly helped me assist him up the stairs. I couldn't help but regard with some sadness the family portrait in the stairwell. Branwell had painted that portrait. He had, when he was younger, possessed artistic talent, and Papa had sacrificed much in order to pay for painting lessons. All of us had hoped Branwell would attend the Royal Academy, but his ambitions and our dreams had come to naught. Now, awkwardly climbing the stairs, Branwell began to weep. Emily and I dragged him into the bedroom he shared with Papa. Anne turned down the coverlet of his bed and pulled out the pillows he had rearranged to trick our father. Emily and I heaved Branwell onto the bed.
"Lydia, my distant, darling Lydia,"
he keened.
"My love for you has ruined me.